people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Shift and Steer. It's just fun in the studio like we always have. It's kind of like sitting around bench racing, sitting around in the ultimate guy garage, you know, the man cave. And but this week it's me, Brad Fanshawe, and on the other end of the phone is Double Aaron, Aaron Hagar. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing good. Hey, I just passed Bradshaw Avenue.
All right, I like that. So
every time I pass Bradshaw Avenue, I think of you.
Is there always a cool car sitting on the corner? No.
There's a couple fake trees. I think they're cell phone towers.
There's a couple. There's probably a couple unfinished cars sitting there, just in my honor. So. But
Bradshaw Road always reminds me of Brad Squish.
Yeah. So, well, hey, let's get right into it because it's busy. Matt's not in the studio today. He's out of town doing something or other, and so we.
What's he doing now?
I don't know.
He's pushing his car.
I don't know. He's been selling. he's been selling some cars for Adam and for some friend of Adam's. You might have seen it on his Instagram feed, and I think he might be out of town doing something for that, but I'm not sure. But
interesting.
He's doing something or other. And
hopefully we get to hear the story next week.
Something car related, that's for sure. So anyways, hey, start out with a couple pieces of big news here, Aaron, that I know you have heard about both of them. Very first one is our buddy Gene Winfield. Gene, who I've known for years. You met him several years back and saw what a cool guy he is. I mean, you met him. Did you meet him for the first time when we were in New York doing the Syracuse Auto Show?
You know, it's hard to say because when you meet Gene, you feel like you've known him forever.
I know.
At least about 4 or 5 years now, I think. But, you know.
Well, whenever we see him, he's fun. He's happy. He's in his 90s and has the energy of a 30-year-old. It's crazy.
Gene the Dancing Machine.
Yeah, I mean, that guy's just awesome. Out chopping tops, doing car shows. Well, he was over in Finland, and he was appearing over there with John DeAgostino, Billy Gibbons, and Jimmy Shine, all of our buddies.
Yeah.
And he fell down some stairs and broke his hip. Well, that's not good at any age, but when you're in your 90s, it's really bad. And then he got put in the hospital, got pneumonia, and, you know, not in the best ways, but he is coming around the bend. He wants to get home. The doctors won't, you know, authorize him to fly commercial because, you know, there's a lot of bad air in those cigar tubes going down the, airways. And so he has to take like a medical flight home, which is a ton of cash. Well, someone set up, I know our buddy Rob Ida, who met Gene for the first time at Syracuse when he had one of his cars there and Gene was having his Gene Winfield Award. And I introduced him because I'd known Ida for years, knew Gene for years, and it was kind of cool to bring them together. Well, Rob has been real instrumental in helping Gene get home. He's even selling some car parts on eBay in an auction to raise some money for him. So he's really into it.
Rob's such a good guy.
Yeah.
And he won the Gene Winfield Award that year.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And so anyways, they're doing a what do they call it? Not a Kickstarter, a GoFundMe.
GoFundMe for Gene.
We'll put a link on there. He might even be home by the time this airs. Let's hope he is. But make sure that you send good wishes to him. And you know, Gene is a hot rod legend, and we want to see him get home, get recovered, and get back out there on the scene.
He's one of the originals, man. You know, he's one of the originals.
He is one of the few originals that are truly still at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like American Hot Rod Institution.
Now, for those of you that don't know, Gene has built, you know, a bunch of legendary cars, including well, to name a few, right? The Back to the Future car, right?
Yeah, and he did some Star Trek stuff, and
and Blade Runner. I believe he built the spinner. Did he not?
Yes, he did, and a ton of hot rods, and he also was a one of the designers and fabricators and guys at AMT Models back in the day, designing really cool things they could make model cars into. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. We all had those. Yeah, so anyway, Gene is not only an amazing car builder, he's a legendary top chopper, and he does. How many did he do last year?
Eight of
like
them. He did. Well, yeah, but nobody goes around and does eight live chops at car shows. I mean, there's a difference, Aaron. It's like building. It's like doing 1,000 of them, because when you're doing them at your house, you can check and double check and do this. And he's doing them in front of a crowd at a car show over the course of 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, it's
But no, he said there was a big number. When we talked to him at SoCal Open House, he had a big number, and we were all like, "Whoa, are you kidding me?"
Yeah,
in 1 year,
it was
nuts. Anyway, the guy is super active, like Mike Anthony's dad. He is the dancing machine. Anytime we see him and we're out socially, he's on the dance floor scooting around. It's pretty awesome.
So yeah.
We love Gene, and we wish him good health. And anyone that wants to help, you can go to GoFundMe Gene Winfield or check any of our social media. It's all over it, and we'd love a little bit more help.
Yeah, we've all retweeted it
home safe.
And helped him, and you know, just jump in there. Anything will help. So now,
exactly.
Speaking of bad vibes and stuff like that, just had that big, huge Hurricane Michael down in the Florida Panhandle.
Oh,
and
now
my brother lives down there, and he's right near Panama City, and as of when we're talking, he hasn't been able to get back in and even know if his house still stands. He had a motorhome that he had planned on loading up and taking everything out, and then they ran out of diesel, and he couldn't, so he had to leave that behind. And so we're waiting to hear, but I was looking on Autoblog this morning, and they were showing pictures of car dealerships and places like Firestone stores and like that in Panama City that are just like wiped off the map. And they had this one photo of a row of Hellcats, okay? And the light poles had fallen on them, and they showed one where this giant light pole with the big LED lights, and it managed to fall and find the sunroof, and it went right through the sunroof, smashed the car down. And then the one next to it, the light pole was laying across the hood. And then the third one, it was amazing. The third one, when you saw it from a distance, it looked like the light poles were laying across it. They showed a photo right up close, and it was sitting an inch above it. That car never got touched, but the other ones did. But then my question is, with the storm surge, they still might be ruined, because if they sat underwater at all, they're no good, you know. But these things were just destroyed. Just destroyed.
Yeah, these storms, I was thinking about that yesterday, too. Are they getting worse, or is it just the news is covering them more, or is it just relevant because we're car guys and there's cars involved? I don't know, but it's devastating, and it's so sad. And, you know, whether you know it's coming or not, to leave stuff behind and come back to nothing, it has to be a horrible, horrible feeling.
Well, yeah, because, you know, it's just, well, especially when the house is just gone. I mean, you look at the news and these houses are wiped off. You can't even sift through anything then. It's just gone,
No, course,
it's like there was a guy in the news plus, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, when it's water, when there's water involved, too, you get those storm surges, and they just take everything away. So it's not even like a tornado where, oh, maybe it's 50 yards away or it's in your neighbor's wall. It's like, it's gone. It's across the state line, you know. It's been washed out to sea. I mean, it's like, gone.
There was a guy in the news this morning, and his house, everything around him was gone. I mean, it was like somebody just came in and wiped it. But he said he had gone through and rebuilt his house, reinforced it, and it was still standing, but the roof was gone and one wall was missing. And he goes, I went in my house today to check it out. And he goes, the belongings of a bunch of other people are in my house. He goes, I don't even know who they are.
We read that too.
Yeah, he goes, it's like everybody's stuff blew into my house, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I woke up to new furniture and a couple fish.
Yeah.
Wow.
So anyways, we wish everybody well. We know that in the big scope of things, the car dealerships are very minor, but it's interesting to talk about. And for car guys, you're thinking about, wow, those Hellcats, you know, they're just wiped off and all the other cars. And what was funny, I did.
And Florida's a big car.
Oh, yeah.
State, you know, I mean, there's classic cars, there's supercars. It's a big car state. So, I'm sure it's.
I don't recall, Aaron, what it was, which hurricane it was, but about 10, 15 years ago when there was a huge hurricane that came in and devastated a large part of the whole state. I mean, it was one of the largest ones they've ever had. And there was some footage of a sheriff's helicopter flying over, and somebody had, you know, gone and got it and was shown. And there was a metal building sitting somewhere, and you looked down in the metal building, and there was a Ferrari GTO a bunch of very rare Ferraris, and the roof was half caved in on them. You knew they were soaked, and you were just going, oh man, somebody's collection is sitting in there, you know? This was well before the GTOs went crazy, but they were still $20 million cars back then, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
but
my goodness, wow. You know, I'm curious too, because we've discussed the aftermath of a lot of these, you know, events and how these cars, if they would hit the market or not, because, I mean, some of these cars are tens of thousands of dealer cars. And what happens to them? So did we ever find out anything about that? Did you look into it at all?
Yeah, you look online and like that, and there's these amazing photos. Like, a lot of them are like in Alabama and Kentucky where there's acres, like hundreds of acres of cars. So, like, the insurance companies get them, they ship them there, and there's just rows and row after row of new car that's wasted and used. Now, I've heard rumors that they refurbish them and send them overseas or to, you know, like Middle Eastern countries or something like that. But I really don't know.
Where they can dry out?
Yeah, where they can dry out. Yeah, a dry climate. So.
Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, it can affect wiring harnesses, you know, mold and mildew. I mean, a lot of materials now have stuff in them to where things don't mold or mildew as much anymore. But still, I mean, an abundance of water that way, and it's not like it's clear water. It's saturated water with whatever is in the environment. So I can only imagine, you know, there's raw sewage, there's, you know, all kinds of elements,
yes,
chemicals. So it's not like it can be refurbished very easily. I would think that would be hugely costly.
Well, the new cars,
the cost of that would be insane.
The new cars, especially with all the electronics, they're toast. And like you said, you know, you think, oh, well, maybe you could take some parts out of them, like the, you know, the seats. Well, do you really want a seat that all that foam inside, like you said, has waste residual water? And, you know, maybe there's some body parts if it wasn't salt water. And, you know, but boy, for the most part, those cars, you know, they're just, you know, nothing. But hey, something that that doesn't have some of those problems, you know, we're talking here, Aaron, about, you know, stuff that's in these cars. Well, think of all the weird things.
Continental belts?
No, think of all the weird things found in cars. I'm not talking about your garden variety petrified French fries or melted crayons or flood water. I'm talking about live snakes. you know, which could float into those cars. Bizarre trinkets and the kind of stuff that just makes you wonder about folks. Another thing that will make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. Bet you didn't know that they're OE on tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also OE on the majority of BMWs and VWs. Now Continental is launching the aftermarket multi-V belt with OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, belts that are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has OE technology series multi-V belts for 98% of vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. Hey, you can get enough surprises working on your car and trucks. A belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V Belt, the belt with OE pedigree. Get the full story. Just go visit them at oetechnologyseries.com. So we appreciate those guys over at Continental. They've been on our show for a long time supporting us. We like that.
Absolutely. Now, I have a question, though. When they're talking about stakes, is that relative to serpentine belt? Shouldn't they use, like, ancient text and go, do you find serpents in your car, you know, in your articulating vehicle instead of snakes? Snakes and serpents, I don't know. Who calls
snakes
them serpents?
Who calls them serpents? I mean, come
just
on.
Call a snake belt.
A snake belt. I had that in a bar once. The guy said, hey, you want a snake belt? And I didn't know what I was drinking, but it bit me.
Did you buy a rattlesnake belt in Texas?
No, it was this snakeskin headband. Really, you know, people didn't dig it a whole lot, but I thought it was cool.
Those are supposed to go on your hat.
That's what it was. So, hey.
It didn't save your skin.
Do you know that we have a guest today?
We have a guest today.
Yes, this is the first guy in our Amsoil series that I've named Amsoil Race Face. We're going to have guys with the real race face from Amsoil. They're coming in and they're going to talk to us. And our first one is Joe Sylvester, who is a sprint car racer. He owns two Guinness Book World Records, and one of them's for jumping a monster truck 237 feet, Aaron. How do you do
it? I can't imagine anything going 237 feet.
Especially a monster truck. So, hey, let me patch him in right now. So, Aaron, I have Joe on the phone, and Joe, welcome to Shift and Steer. How you doing, man?
Not too bad, man. How are you guys doing?
We are doing great.
Very good.
We're doing great. Now,
happy to have you on board.
And I just blew Aaron's mind because I told him, I said, hey, we're going to have Joe Sylvester on. And he started to freak out because he goes, I just looked at these carts. And he goes, we've had them at the Torchmate studio. And I was checking them out and I was talking to the guys about them. And then I backed it up with, oh, yeah, and he has a world record jump of 237 feet in a monster truck. And I think, Aaron, I heard steam coming out his ears.
That's perfect. And I'm a metalhead, too. I'm a metalhead. I love
it. There you go. See, it all works out now, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Where does
Brad fit? Hey, maybe I could be on the next Torchmate TV show.
You know what? You know what? That's what I was going to get to, is that we have season 4 and 5 coming up now, so I'm going to mention it, and maybe we can build one of those on the show, because you're already with Torchmate and Lincoln, so that might be
absolutely
really, really cool.
That'd
I'm going to pitch it. I'm going there on Tuesday. I'll pitch it on Tuesday.
Perfect. I have plenty of time on camera, so it comes pretty naturally, so you ain't got to worry about that part, that's for sure.
So, Joe, you are the very first guest in our Amsoil Race Face series here on Shift and Steer. So we thought it would be a lot of fun to have you on because of what you've done. Now you're in outside of Youngsfield, Ohio. Is that where you're at?
Youngstown, Ohio.
Youngstown, Ohio.
Just outside of Youngstown, yeah. I live in Canfield. My coffee shop business is based out of Boardman. And, you know, we've got a franchise over in Austintown. So, yeah, basically right around the Youngstown area. But to be honest, I've spent probably majority of my life traveling all over the world. So, but this is definitely where my roots are.
Cool. And now tell us a little bit about, I mean, I've got a bio here, and you know how bios are, but the one thing I see, we got a commonality here. You began racing BMX bikes in 1995. And now I'm a big BMX racer myself. I raced pro. I ran the American Bicycle Association. However, by the 1995 mark where you began racing, I was already long out of there and on to my car world of building hot rods and stuff like that. So, but kind of take us through it. How, I mean, because I know so many guys, and we've even talked about it here on the show, that guys who BMX racing was their first form of racing because it's that first chance to hot rod the bike, you know, tune it in, get it dialed in, and then go out and get that feeling of winning, you know, and that's how I always think about it.
You're absolutely right. You know, I mean, it gives you that first sense of individuality, you know, where you're not involved with, like a team or a coach or anything like that. You're kind of just, you're on your own. It's up to you how good you want to be. If you want to get out of bed early in the morning and train and push yourself, there's no penalty if you don't do all your laps. Nobody's going to go make you run around the block if you didn't do something right. It's all on you, you know, and it comes down to your will of how bad you want it, how bad you want to win. So that started for me at a very early age with BMX, and then, you know, eventually went into racing mountain bikes, raced downhill and dual slalom and mountain cross. And, you know, amongst all the things that I've raced my whole life, which I've raced just about everything you could think of with wheels at one point or another, bicycles is still a huge passion of mine. I ride almost every day, mostly mountain biking and road biking now. Every now and then I ride a little bit of BMX, especially during the winter months here that we can't really ride outside too much. We have Ray's Indoor Bike Park up in Cleveland, and I'll usually hop on a cruiser, a 24-inch cruiser, and go ride there once a week with my buddies. And anymore nowadays, it's a lot of them are all buddies of mine through the car world and custom motorcycles and stuff like that. And we all have that common bond of cycling as well. And it's just such a fun thing to go do, stay in shape, have a good time. And, you know, we go out to dinner afterwards and everything. So it's become like a social activity as much as it's been a fitness activity.
Yeah, you're right. It is. And what's funny is I've interviewed or met or been friends with so many racers, whether it's IndyCar, sprint cars, drag racing, and from a certain age, they all raced BMX. And like, I remember Del Warsham, funny car driver. I had him in the studio one day and we started geeking out because he still has BMX bikes and he rides them around the pits. That's kind of his thing. And we started geeking out. I rode this. I rode that. You know, it's funny.
That's great.
So you went on and you got that taste of racing. And took it a little bit different place. You went in now. Did sprint cars come first, or did the monster trucks come first?
No, sprint cars actually. I just started racing a couple of years ago. Monster trucks came first, but before that was karting, motocross, freestyle motocross, and I also did a little bit of SCCA stuff. I had an RX-7 back when I was in high school, and I did a little bit of SCCA road course time trial stuff. And I did a lot of shifting cart stuff, too. Me and my dad actually traveled and raced a little bit together. We had a local track that we both raced at as well. And really, you know, from BMX and mountain bikes, I got more and more into motocross. Because motocross, I actually got into about the same time I got into BMX. Unfortunately, you know, when I was younger, you know, once I started riding motocross and I started seeing all the first Krusty Demons of Dirt videos and everything, which really kind of spawned my entire evolution. It did. It literally did. You know, it completely shifted the course of my life at an early age. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I need to do. This is what I was meant to do. I'm meant to go out and entertain people and get crazy on motorcycles. And, you know, so I had dreams of becoming a pro rider one day. And much like probably 90% of people that have that same dream, it's tarnished by injuries. And for me, it was basically one bad injury that put me in the hospital per year like 5 years straight, like during my teen years.
Wow.
I'd be like the peak of my physical fitness. I'd be doing great, and I'd get taken out and just severely injured.
Yeah.
I've had major brain trauma. I've had two broken backs. I've had severe internal injuries and internal bleeding. I've had some pretty heinous stuff, and through that, you know, and it was never really, it never bothered me. You know, I would get hurt, and I think, when can I get back on a bike? When can I start riding? But it got to a point where I think I was around 19 or 20 years old. You know, I started to see what it was doing to people around me that I cared about, you know, loved ones, family members, you know, things like that. When they're sitting there looking at you hooked up to a tube in the hospital, and you see that they're just completely just, you know, completely just destroyed over this, you know, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, when can I get back on a bike again? It's kind of selfish, and it kind of hits you in a different way than the physical pain. So I was like, you know what, I need to, there's no happy median with this kind of stuff for me. It's either full throttle, wide open all the time, or nothing at all. So I was like, I need to get away from this and do something else before I kill myself or wind up in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And
giant truck hundreds of feet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
He
like,
throttled it back a little bit, Aaron. He didn't want to go all out.
Well, I needed to get a cage around me at least. Yeah. I needed to get a cage around me at least, you know. And at the time, I was really involved in big mud trucks, and I always had a lifted truck.
You know?
I was going to a lot of truck shows and stuff, so that's kind of what spawned the interest in monster trucks. And at 22 years old, with the help of a business loan from the bank, I was able to get a semi, a trailer, a used monster truck. And at 22 years old, I was out monster trucking. And
wow.
I got my CDL and stuff, and I didn't go to college. I graduated high school, and that was it, you know. I had my own business. I worked for my dad in construction, but then I always had my own business on the side, building trucks and building custom quads. And then monster trucks became my full-time gig once I got into that. And I was fortunate enough to make my living at it and traveled around the country about 45 weekends a year. And, you know, my entire 20s, it was a lot like being in a band. You know, you travel. You're out all nights, all hours of the night. You don't sleep very well. You're not eating right. You're drinking a lot of caffeine and just jumping from town to town to town, entertaining people. And you pack up and move on.
It's hard work.
It is.
Hard work.
It's a lot of fun, though. It's definitely hard work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm finding every business is hard work. But show business, I mean, it's hard work, but I think it's also one of the most rewarding things you could ever do, to put your heart and soul into something and then go out on that stage or that floor and entertain people. And when you get out of the truck and they're all screaming for you, it makes every single little bit of that hard work and sleepless nights worthwhile.
Indeed. It's even harder when you're driving yourself, because then you got to split up the workload of driving, setting up, you know, doing the mechanics and the tech work, and being the
right
pilot, and having to focus and entertain and take care of your family. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize how much work it is. It's insane. It's mentally and physically taxing, you know. So
absolutely, that's
it, where that's awesome, man.
And that's where the coffee came into play. I was always needing caffeine, whether it was truck stop coffee or energy drinks. And you know, I was able to travel the world, and at one point I discovered small batch, you know, craft coffee, not the stuff at the truck stop or the gas station or anything like that, but actually like fresh roasted, really good, you know, specialty coffee. And it was completely changed my palate. You know, I'm like, wow, so this is what coffee's actually supposed to taste like. And over the years, when I decided I wanted to branch off and not just rely on racing to make a living, I decided to start High Octane Coffee Company just about 2 years ago. And one thing I found was that, you know, I loved coffee, but I hated coffee shops. They were dull, they were bland, they were boring, and they were not my kind of people. They weren't tattooed grease monkeys doing burnouts in the parking lot. It was the complete opposite of that. So I said, you know what? Why does coffee have to be this way? Why can't coffee be the rock and roll lifestyle and the automotive community and specialty coffee all rolled into one? So that's when I got the idea to start High Octane Coffee, and I really just took it and ran with it. So, you know, you come, we have weekly car shows, and I'm the only person in the world that can say race sprint cars, jump monster trucks, and roast coffee.
Yeah. and it's not a hipster thing.
You know, it's the complete opposite.
Coffee these days is all hipster. So, no,
and where is
cool.
And where is this located, Joe?
It is in my hometown of Bourbon, Ohio, and I just started franchising as well. The first franchise opened up about a year ago, one town over, in Austin, owned by a nice husband and wife that also believe in the vision and the image of it. We have a small core group of employees that also really believe in the vision and the direction that we're going with High Octane Coffee, because it is so unique for the coffee market. We're completely going in a different direction than what anybody else is in the coffee world. I started getting into some retail stores, grocery stores, and things like that. And we're trying to branch off. You know, I've got interest of, you know, potential franchisees all over the country that want to do something like this. And it's all people involved in the automotive community. You know, there's a strong love affair in America with motorcycles, cars, and racing. And then coffee really kind of ties in nicely to all of that. So
it makes sense. That's fantastic.
So,
well, good job and good luck with it. Get those truck stops. Change your damn coffee. You know?
Yeah.
Good coffee.
Now, let me ask you something, Joe. On top of the location, so it sounds like you also sell coffee beans and, you know, ground coffee and like that? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you can order everything right on my website online at gethighoctanecoffee.com. And we ship out every day. You know, it's roasted fresh and shipped out daily.
Cool. That sounds really good.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
I want to ask you something else. You have a pilot's license, right?
No, I don't.
You mean you flew a monster truck 237 feet and they didn't give you a pilot's license?
No, they sure didn't.
Come on, man. You got ripped off. So tell us how that came to be. How did you decide? Because that's one of the things when you talk about it on a podcast, people can envision it, you know, the giant tires, the truck, I saw the photo online of the pyrotechnics in the background, and you're flying through the air. I mean, you got to tell us, how did you get this harebrained idea? How did it come to be, and how'd it go? I mean, you know, take us through it, man.
Oh, man. I mean, there's a couple stories with that. You know, I actually did it twice. I did it in 2010. And I did it in 2013. And really the idea came, you know, the whole entire thing with a monster truck. And, you know, I've kind of been away from the sport for a few years as an owner. But I'm actually possibly, you know, this is the first time I've ever talked about it, I guess, in public. But we are discussing the possibility of doing a high octane monster truck next.
Right here on Shift and Steer. You heard it first.
I've got a lot of crazy, unique ideas for the truck. How I'm going to build it, what it's going to look like, how it's going to be used in marketing and branding for some of my partners like AMSOIL, like Lincoln Electric. You know, but that's a totally different subject, whole different story there. But for the record jump, you know, and really some of the people that really supported me most outside of my family is my extended family, Blair and Sabrina Miller. They run a little event called the Cornfield 500 in a little tiny town called Columbus, Pennsylvania, 2 hours away from where I live. And before I met them at a monster truck show when I just got into the sport. You know, I'm a 22-year-old punk kid. I'm the youngest owner driver in the sport at this time. I got a mohawk. I'm tattooed. You know, I'm a complete not what you expect when you think about a monster truck driver at that particular time. And, you know, I met them. They were at a show that I happened to be at, and I was actually crewing for another team. I wasn't even driving. And they'll tell you the story. They met me, and they saw something. And I told them from that point, right then and there, wow, you had just got into the sport, I'm going to break Bigfoot's world record one day, jump on a monster truck. And they believed me, and they believed in me. And I had gone for a few years where I would go to their event, and I would perform freestyle exhibitions with my truck. And, you know, it's a car race that they do, and they have freestyle motocross and mud bogs and stuff like that. And I would come perform freestyle exhibitions. So when the time came that I had the experience, I had the truck on a level to where I felt confident in it, and I had some good marketing partners on board, I went to them and said, hey, you guys have the land that I need to pull off a jump this big, and you've believed in me. Let's make it happen. So in 2010, I decided, you know, for the first time, I was going to go after it and break Bigfoot's record towards the end of my season. It was Labor Day weekend. And there was a lot of planning and stuff, obviously, that went into it. We built the ramps ourselves, me and Blair, with a little tiny bulldozer and a road grader. It took us like a week to build these ramps out of dirt. And, you know, so the truck, you know, a lot of people don't even know that a week before my record jump, a lot of people know about the crash 5 days before the successful jump. But a lot of people don't know that 5 days before that crash, I also destroyed the truck by blowing up the motor and hurting myself really bad at a show in New York. I would do an upstate New York tour every year. It was part of like a fair series. This is where I was talking about where it's kind of like, you know, being in a band, like one night stands. We would do four different shows in four different cities in 5 days. And it was just me by myself, me and my dog. So I would go, I would set up my merchandise, find somebody to sell my merchandise for me. I would set my monster truck up. I would do a show, throw it back in the trailer, head to the next town the next day, do it all over again. Well, the last show on this tour, which was a week away from my practice jump that we had scheduled for my world record, the very last show, my motor blew up in midair. Kicked the rods right out of the block. And when that happens, obviously it locks the motor up solid. And when you basically lock the wheels up in the air in one of these trucks, it lands like a ton of bricks. I landed and I thought I broke my back again for like a third time. And I'm sitting there in the truck and I'm thinking to myself, the motor's blown up. I have a broken back and I have a world record jump to practice in a week and then successfully land 5 days after that. I'm like, what
the hell
am
I going
to do? So
what was your first thought? I'm only going to be able to go 230 feet?
Well, I only had to beat 202 back then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
the record that stood. Bigfoot made the jump 10 years before that, and nobody even contested it. Nobody tried it. I think it was in 2000, I believe, when they made their record jump of 202 feet. You've probably seen the video. Bigfoot, he's jumping over a 747 jetliner and stuff. It's pretty cool. But nobody ever tried to beat that until this young punk kid from Ohio that comes along. You know, and I always built my own truck. I built my chassis. I built my shocks. So I'm immediately thinking, what do I need to do to make this happen? So to kind of make a long story a little bit shorter, through some people I knew in drag racing, were able to get an engine builder to throw the motor together for me. And I went out and the next week made my practice jump at the Cornfield 500, which was absolutely terrible, but also really good for marketing at the same time. I wasn't even planning on I wasn't going full throttle. I was doing about 65 miles an hour, which is still really fast in a monster truck. And I just wanted to test my ramps and everything. And I'm heading at this ramp, and I'm thinking, as I'm sitting in the truck, I'm looking at it. And you know, when you're up in the truck, everything looks differently than it does when you're on the ground. And I'm looking at this ramp that we built. It's about 15 to 16 feet tall. It's huge. And it had a pretty good transition to it. It's pretty steep. I'm heading at this thing, and I'm like, wow. I'm like, I am going to land in the next freaking county. I'm like, well, I'm going to do it. You know, let's see what happens here, you know? And I never expected it to go as horribly wrong as it did. I hit this thing, and it hucks the truck about 60 feet up in the air, high off the ground. There's trees in the background. If you ever see pictures of the practice jump, the bottom of my tires is above the tree line. And I kid you not, when I hit the top, when the truck started to nose over, my stomach dropped like I was on a roller coaster. Because all of a sudden, I went from going up to looking straight at the ground through the windshield, and I'm 60 feet above the ground. And I went over 200 feet. And I'm looking straight at the ground, and that was the first and only time in my life in a monster truck I was legitimately scared, thinking that I'm not going to walk away from this. This is going to be bad. Like, this is way, way, way too high. I should not be this high. I feel like I'm falling off of a building. And when I hit the ground, the truck tumbled about three or four times, it cartwheeled, it ripped the back half of the chassis off, the fuel cell, the hydraulic rams, broke the front axle housing in half, ripped the wheel off, broke four shocks. Just it hurt me. I cracked the roll cage. I actually hit so hard I stretched the harnesses. And actually had to replace the five-point harnesses in the truck because they actually stretched the webbing and I'm stretched. I didn't get hurt too terribly bad. I was definitely sore, but I was alive and I was moving. So immediately I'm like, how the hell am I going to afford to fix this? I just spent my last dime getting the motor rebuilt. Now I got the whole truck wadded up, and I got a wreck in 5 days. But you know what? I made it happen. My dad helped me out, some other people locally there that could come and lend a hand, you know, working on the truck, because I fixed the truck right there in the field where I was doing the jump at. And, put it all back together. And 5 days later was the big event. You know, we had a few thousand tickets sold for it. And I'm like, you know, it's time to go big. I don't know what's going to happen here, but either way, it's going to be spectacular. I'm either going to crash again or I'm going to break the record.
Yeah, it sounds like the talk around town was, hey, are you going out to see Joe ball up his truck again tonight? Oh, yeah, I got a ticket, man. Now, did you get
Exactly. You know, everybody had seen the crash footage. You know, it went viral like overnight, you know, because it was just raw video, like on a cell phone. And, you know, the cameras were terrible back then, but nobody was expecting that to happen. You know,
exactly.
It was just a practice jump. But it went viral, and all of a sudden, ticket sales went up. People were watching it online. I had buddies like down at the Gravedigger shop in North Carolina said they threw a party, and they all partied like crazy and bought it on pay per view to watch me do it.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to make this or not, but one way or either way, it's going to be spectacular.
So, do you have the record for the height and the length now?
I don't think there actually is a world record for height.
Hey, Joe.
I don't think it's ever been
Joe,
recorded,
we just gave it to you, man.
Close.
We just gave it to you. You have the world record for height.
Perfect.
It's crowned by Shift and Steer. Yeah. Hey, I've got to do something. I got to tell you something. I've got to interrupt here because I got to talk about our sponsor, okay? The guys who support you and support Shift and Steer. Let's talk about Amsoil. You know why I like Amsoil, Joe? Because
there's a lot of reasons.
Well, it's because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads. They're into all kinds of power sports, and basically they get it. And you just told us a story about how they do get it. Recently,
yep, company of enthusiasts.
Yes, and recently Amsoil created a guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It's insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine. And you can get a free copy at amsoil.com/shift. That is S-H-I-F-T. While there, find out more about Amsoil synthetic motor oil, too, like how Amsoil Signature Series synthetic motor oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by the leading industry standard. Go to Amsoil.com/shift to get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower. Those are the guys that make it happen for us and for guys with a Amsoil race face like Joe. But Joe, we got to get in the special mentions for Amsoil. But so you were saying that you had it all handled. You had all the people ready to watch. How smooth did it go?
It actually went fairly smooth. You know, and I told everybody, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to keep jumping until we break the record or break the truck. And the first jump that we did, obviously we had modified the ramp since my crash. The first jump I did came up a few feet short. We had a professional surveyor there surveying everything for, you know, because we have certain guidelines to follow for Guinness World Records. And we come up a couple feet short, and I said, you know what, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to go back down. Let's change the ramp around just a little bit, out of just a slight bit more transition to it so that we get a little more compression and rebound out of the shocks to kind of, you know, for lack of better terms, pogo the truck a little bit of extra distance.
Right.
I'm going to turn around. I'm going to hit this thing again. And sure enough, you know, a few minutes later, I was heading back towards the ramp again, and people are waiting to see what happened. And the second jump actually broke the record. And I went 208 feet. So I just barely broke Bigfoot's record by 6 feet. And I know it was an awesome feeling. It was an amazing accomplishment for me, my team, and, you know, the truck that we had built in-house. And then sure enough, about a year or two later, Bigfoot came and they broke the record that I had just set. They went, I think, 214 or something like that. They broke my record by a few feet.
Those damn show-offs.
As soon as I did that, hey, it's competition, man. It's competition. You know, it keeps things exciting. And it's all about putting on a show for the fans and people interested and doing things nobody's ever seen done before. And they did it a little bit differently than me. You know, they use a different style ramp and everything like that. You know, and they have their way of doing things, and I had my way. You know, my way was jumping over my semi with a bunch of fire in the background. And, you know, they broke my record, and I was like, oh, hell no. I worked way, way too hard to get that record. I'm going to get it back. So I call up Blair and Sabrina again. I said, hey, let's do this world record thing again. And I actually got some of my sponsors on board that year, KMC Wheels, GoPro, and they got Sweatpants Media, who does a lot of the Nitro Circus stuff, to come and film the whole thing. And we got a lot of really cool people involved and a lot of cool people doing, you know, kind of like Travis Pastrana, Robbie Madison, other KMC-sponsored athletes that also had world records kind of like signed off, you know, that, you know, what I was doing was crazy. And, you know, they were excited to see what I was going to do. So that was really, really cool. So this time around, there was no practice jump. All I did was tune the truck up to go as fast as I could possibly make the truck go. I'm like, if this thing will do 100 miles an hour, I'm going to hit that ramp at 100 miles an hour, and we'll see what happens.
Oh, my
and,
God.
You know, very, very.
Throw the engineering out the door.
Yeah, very scientific. I'm always very scientific.
Hit it fast and go hard.
Let's see what happens.
That's awesome.
And, So we went back again, and all we did was speed runs just to test the speed of the truck, kind of get it dialed in.
A little Evel Knievel style there, right?
Standpoint. Right. So the day of the jump, I made a speed pass past the crowd one time, waved and turned around, and came back, and I made one jump and went 237 feet.
That's awesome.
And that is the record that still stands today.
Joe, that's awesome. That's kind of stories we like to hear, man. Aaron?
That's awesome, man.
So Joe, we got to kind of wrap it up here because we're coming up to the top of the hour already. It goes so fast when we're having fun. What I want to do now, we can find you on social media at JoeSylvester8. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And
JoeSylvester8 and
GetHighOctaneCoffee.com, well, right?
GetHighOctaneCoffee.com and High Octane Coffee on all social media, on Instagram and Facebook. We stay pretty active on both of those platforms.
Cool.
So, and, you know, if you want to support the brand that is run by the crazy guy like me, you know, we're all gearheads. We eat, sleep, and breathe the motorsports lifestyle.
Well, that's awesome.
Indeed.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time from your schedule and from your coffee drinking to come on Shift and Steer. And are we going to see you at SEMA this year? Are you going to be out there? We're going to run into you?
I will. I will be at SEMA this year. Absolutely.
Stop by and say hi. We're doing a live. We have a stage at the Magnaflow booth on the main hall there. And just come by. We'll be doing a live show every day. Come by and meet us.
Oh, very cool. I'll definitely come by and meet you guys. Absolutely.
Great. Hey, thank you, Joe. We really do appreciate it, man.
I appreciate it, guys. I enjoy it.
And we will put links to all of Joe's social media and his coffee as well as his racing website on our website at shiftandsteer.com. So you'll be able to find it there like always. So, Aaron, what'd you think about that? That was our very first Amsoil race face interview. That guy, tell me he doesn't have a race face. He wants to race anything that he can get his hands on.
So awesome. And I know we only touched on a fraction of his career. He's got a really lengthy career. He's raced everything. So I want to hear more.
No, and it was really cool, the little tie-in where you guys just on your Torchmate show had the carts that he had fabricated for Lincoln Welders years ago. That's cool.
Yeah. I hope we can follow up on that and build them on the show next season.
Yeah, it's all meant to be.
Hey, like this guy.
Do you want to hear about some of the guys we got in the coming weeks?
Absolutely.
Listen to this. We've got a pro snowcross racer. What do you think of that?
That would be interesting. I want to hear more about that.
Have you ever watched those guys on the tricked out snowmobiles? That, I mean, they ride them like, you know, like supercross. I know,
and the only ones I've ever ridden land like tanks. So I'm real curious to see how they survive the land.
Yeah, exactly. Then we're going to have a guy who's a rally racer, which those guys are a little bit on the ragged edge. And
fearless.
And then we've got a racer who won this year's Nora 1000 in Baja, Mexico. So an off-road racer.
Oh.
And we've got a pro motocross racer who rides for FMF. And so we got some great guys coming on as part of our Amsoil Race Face. It's going to be fun, and we're going to talk about all kinds of racing, not just automotive, because, you know, put anything in front of us that we can race, and we're there. But
I'm real curious on the snowmobiles, too.
Yeah, I know. It'll
be
fun.
I've never talked to anyone or known anyone. So,
yeah, that's going to be fun.
Cool.
Hey, but you know what? We can't always be racing and shining on our car. Every once in a while, we got to have a little bit of download time at the beach. And, Aaron, we talked about this last week or the week before that we were getting ready to go. And now that it's in the books, we were able to find downtime at the beach with music and a car show.
Indeed, it was pretty amazing. You know, the first event, we definitely had some hiccups. But
every first event has hiccups, you know?
Yeah, every. And it was real consistent, which means it's real fixable. But next year, we've already announced we're doing 2 days. The day of the 5th and the 6th, tickets are already on sale. And it is going to be well worth it because it's going to be bigger and better and more perfect.
Now, it was fun. If you go to our social media, either mine at Bradley_Fanshaw or Aaron Hagar on Instagram, you will see some of the photos that we took at the Sammy Hagar High Tide,
High Tide
Beach Party.
Yeah,
I keep
really
calling it a beach festival because when I was looking at it, dude, it looked like a festival. I mean, there was like...
It was. I think there was like, 15, 16, 18,000, 20,000. I don't even know.
I was going to say 15 to 20,000 people. And, the sound was awesome. And the weather couldn't have gotten any better. I mean, that was just like...
Yeah, the weather was perfect.
Yeah,
enough breeze to keep you cool. Yeah, it really was. But, you know, the drone shots, whoever was piloting that drone, the drone shots of the whole landscape, you don't realize how big the event was. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I never got off the stage or the backstage area. Basically, I was working. And when I saw those shots, I went, whoa, it was that big? I mean, it was huge.
No.
And, we have to organize that space a little bit better next year. But, man, it was epic. And I think once people were in, we had some delays with the ADA and some stuff, some permit stuff. But once everybody was in, I think they all had a great time. The music was phenomenal. We had some really good bands, including Real Big Fish, which I think just set the mood for the rest of the show, because that ska, you know, you can't frown and listen to ska music.
Exactly.
You know
what
I mean?
Yeah. and
it was really fun.
I had Eddie Money out there and REO Speedwagon playing all their hits. And your dad and Mikey and Satriani and all their guests that they had come up, it just rocked. It was a lot of fun. Good attitude.
Yeah.
Everybody walked out with a smile on their face. And
indeed. And the Muscle Kings put on a great car show. We had Dad's Boxer there from the I Can't Drive 55 videos. We had the Woody Wagon there. We had the Million Dollar Mustang there. We had Ferraris, McLarens, Corvettes, Chevelles. I mean, Camaros, everything you can imagine was there. And they were all perfect. I mean, these cars were perfect. Not at the end of the day. They were wet and sandy and dusty. And
yes.
And fingerprinted. But, man, there were some great cars there. And I think that the car show aspect was really cool. We had a lot of retailers there. And, there was some good stuff.
Well, next year with 2 days, I think that we're going to work on getting Shift and Steer an area out there to do our show live and maybe have a couple of our cars that we've talked about on the show over the years, like your
Indeed.
your car, maybe one of mine. Maybe we'll get a Fox body out there from somebody. What do you think we could find one?
Yeah, I don't see why Matt can't. Yeah, if it's ever ready.
It'll give him a deadline. Matt, you got to have it done. Oh, wait. He did that for SEMA 2 years ago.
Yeah, forget SEMA.
So.
Forget ready for SEMA. Be ready for the high tide.
Yes.
But you know what? Real quick, I have to give a thanks and shout-out to Mike Brewer and Ann and Ralph from R&D Garage and Von Hot Rod and a few of our other guests who we didn't get to do our thing at the beginning of the show. Everything got pushed like 2 hours, and they came and went. I was able to grab the meal tickets and give them a hug and say thank you. But so I apologize to those guys, including your partner, Mike Brewer, who were all wonderful and willing to come and shed some of their busy schedule and time on us. So thank you for that, guys.
You know what? What do they say? Even a bad day at the beach is good?
Exactly.
Yes.
Especially when you got beach and cars.
Exactly. So it's missing it. But hey, so we're wrapping up another shift in steer. Aaron, where are you off to now?
I am off to Cabo. We are we're driving in the car, headed to the airport as we speak. So I did this literally mobile, and we're going to the birthday bash. Give Dad a big hug.
I knew you were going
right
to do that
to
me. I know, Mikey. Mikey's been down there. Mikey's been down there all week, enjoying the sun, posting photos of his feet in the pool. And I'm like,
I know, Mikey and Jason have been posting some nice photos.
I know. And
yeah,
you know what?
We got to step up our game.
I haven't been down there. He asked me, "Are you going to go to Cabo this year?" And I'm like, "Oh man, it's so close to SEMA. It's this, that." And you know what? Someday I'm just going to have to go. The hell with it. I'm going. And maybe next
year. Yeah, you got it. Well, the only reason why we're going is Dad sending his plane back to Marin to pick up some family and some other folks, and he invited us to fly down and back with him. Otherwise, we weren't going to go because we were looking after my sister.
Yep.
So she's going to go, and we thought, you know what, let's just go. So we drove all the way back to Tahoe to get our passport, and now we're driving all the way down.
Yeah.
So
well, hey.
We're dedicated, man. We're committed.
You know what? If my dad sent my plane for me, I'd be a happy
camper.
So,
we can't say that often. And we can't say it without giggling, but we have to say yes.
Well, cool.
We have to say yes.
Do me a favor, Aaron. Have fun down there, and
will do.
And tell your dad happy birthday. And
will do. I'll give Mikey a hug for you too.
Yes, do that. And you know what? We'll meet back up at SEMA, everybody. Don't forget, if you're going to SEMA, you're going to want to come see us. We're going to be live once a day on stage at MagnaFlow in the Central Hall, and we will post on our website, on our social media, the times. And I've started locking in guests today, and while we're on the air, I just got our first confirmation, and David Freiberger is going to come by and spend some time with us.
Hey.
Yeah. So we always get some great guests there, and that's just going
to
kick it off. That's going to be fun. So we'll be talking about some roadkill. So
looking forward to it.
But anyways, hey, Aaron, where can they find you online?
I am everywhere at the moment, but always you can find me at Aaron Hagar and the Rat Runners Garage.com. And we're pretty easy to find.
Hey, find me on Instagram. That's where I have most of my fun. And Instagram is Bradley_Fanshaw. And everywhere else, it's Brad Fanshaw. But you want to find the show, you can find all the back episodes. You can find our videos, our photo galleries. You can find all that stuff. And stuff like our schedule for SEMA will be at shiftandsteer.com. So go there, and next week, I think all of us will be back. It'll be the Three Musketeers, and we'll be here getting ready for the big SEMA week. And everybody, thanks for listening to Shift and Steer. We'll see you.
Thank you much. Have a great day.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.